all those who are here with us, to all those who are here with us virtually as well, thank you for muting yourself and making sure that we're all able to pay close attention to the shiur. And today we are going to digress from our regular series of shiurim, which is normally about Pirkei Avos, and we're going to discuss a timely issue, which is all about Halakos Neros Chanukah. We all know that we will be celebrating Chanukah this week on Thursday evening, and that is a very exciting time of year for all of us, I hope. And it's important that we be familiar with some of the basic halachos that govern the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah. So let us begin with the beautiful words of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos, Megillah v'Chanukah. It's a major question why the Rambam puts the laws of Megillah and Chanukah together. They're two separate holidays. Purim and Chanukah are not the same at all. But be it as it may, the Rambam here writes in the fourth perek of Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah that mitzvahs ner Chanukah, the halacha, the mitzvah of lighting Chanukah candles is a mitzvah chaviva hi ad me'o. This is a very unusual terminology that the Rambam uses. And he says that the mitzvah of lighting Chanukah candles is one which is very much celebrated, which is very beloved to us. Vitzarech adam lehizaher bazeh, and therefore, says the Rambam, because it is such a beloved mitzvah, because it is so cherished in our eyes, therefore, he says, we need to be careful to do whatever we can to perform the mitzvah properly, which always boggles my mind. People travel every year and make all kinds of arrangements to go away with no plan for Neros Chanukah. And they come to you ex post facto and ask, well, what do I do? I'm stuck. Well, you shouldn't have gotten yourself stuck. Mitzvah Ner Chanukah is a mitzvah chaviva hi ad me'od. If you really care about it, you wouldn't get stuck. So the Rambam says we're supposed to care enough about the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah that we should not get ourselves into a situation where we are stuck. Now the Rambam continues. What is the reason for lighting the candles on Chanukah? Number one, he says, is Kedei Lehodia Hanes, in order that we should publicize the miracle that happened to the Jewish people. And number two, says the Rambam, Lehosiv B'Shevach HaKel V'Hodaya Lo, to praise and to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that we have in our lives. Al Anisim She'asa Lanu V'Lavosenu, to all that God has performed for us, and to all that He does for our ancestors as well. And this is a very important point that the Rambam raises. Sometimes we perform the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, we check off the box, we say we did what we were supposed to do, and we move on. But the Rambam says it's an opportunity for us, number one, to remember that the objective of lighting the Chanukah candles is to publicize the miracle, and number two, it's an opportunity for us to take pause and to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to praise Him for all that we have in our lives. You know, this year we're going to say She'echiyanu v'kiyamanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh. It's something that we say every year on Chanukah, and every Yom Tov, every experience that we have to do a mitzvah once a year. I was thinking a lot about that bracha when we came to Chag HaSukkos. I was thinking a lot about it on Shavuos and also on Pesach. All the different times that we recite the bracha of She'echiyanu, and it's a difficult bracha to say this year. Do we really thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us this kind of situation that we're living in right now? It's not so much to be happy about. There's a lot of difficulty. There's a lot of inconvenience. And this is a question that we need to ask ourselves. What do we mean when we say She'echiyanu? And I think we should look no further than the fact that we are here. She'echiyanu v'kiyamanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh. This year, when you say She'echiyanu on Chanukah, you don't need to think too hard about what you're being grateful for. Be grateful for the opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed us to be here. That we, perhaps, are not sick. That we have not lost our lives when so many others have. She'echiyanu v'kiyamanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh. That itself is a profound sense of gratitude, of thanks, that we owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if not for anything more than that alone. So the first question one always needs to ask themselves whenever discussing any mitzvah is, who is obligated in this mitzvah? We talk about Neros Chanukah. We need to ask, who is included in the obligation of lighting the Chanukah candles? So there's a general rule that determines which mitzvos are going to be ones that are expected for a woman to participate in, and which ones we say that women do not have an obligation to fulfill. So the Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, and some people misunderstand this to mean that women are not worthy enough of fulfilling these mitzvos. That's not at all what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that women are assumed to be often much busier than men are, and therefore we do not expect them to observe some of the mitzvos. If I would ask you, without knowing anything, there are 613 mitzvos in the Torah, and many of us are familiar with the fact that women are not obligated to keep all of them. How many would you say are in that category of women not being obligated to observe? How many people think it's somewhere around 100 mitzvos that they're, right? What would you say? All those who think 100 mitzvos that women are not obligated to perform, raise your hands. Okay, two. All those who think it's somewhere around 50 mitzvos, raise your hands. Okay? The answer is it's less than 10. So we have a rule that women are not obligated to keep a certain category of mitzvos. When you break it down and you look through the entire list of 613 mitzvos, there are very few that women are actually not obligated to fulfill or to observe. So we have this concept in our head that it's probably 50 or 100, but it's not. It's less than 10. So the Mishnah says, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Kiddushin, mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, when you have a mitzvah that can only be performed at a particular time of the year, such a case we assume anashim chayavim v'nashim pituros. In such a case we assume that men have an obligation to observe that mitzvah, women are absolved from that obligation. Which includes, the Gemara says, a very short list. It includes the mitzvah of Kriya Shema every day. It includes the mitzvah of shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because you only blow the shofar one day a year. It includes the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, the mitzvah of shaking the lulav, the mitzvah, perhaps, of sviras ha'omer, not even clear. Bris milah, women don't have an obligation to fulfill. Tzitzis and tefillin, that is the whole list. That is the whole list of mitzvos that women have a ptur, have a right to overlook. It is only that very short list. And that's what the Gemara tells us based on this concept, that anything that is a time-bound mitzvah, they don't have an obligation to observe. Now we know there are obviously many other mitzvos that are very specific to the time when they are going to be observed, and yet women are obligated. So there are more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself, which is interesting. But that's often in life we find that there are more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. So there are a number of exceptions that are all in one category. For example, the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah Daf Dalet, when it comes to the mitzvah of reading the Megillah on Purim, women share the obligation with men. Why? Why should they share that obligation? Don't we know that the mitzvah of reading the Megillah is only performed one time a year, only on Purim? That is certainly a time-bound mitzvah, so why should women share in that obligation? Isn't that a prime example of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama? And the Gemara says the reason why is because af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. Women were included in the danger in the times of Haman, Achashverosh, Mordechai, and Esther. Women were in some way the protagonists of the whole Yeshua. Esther Hamalka was a major force in the whole story. And therefore we assume that since women shared the danger and women were involved in the whole story equally to the way that the men were, therefore they have an equal obligation to commemorate that great miracle. So women need to read the Megillah both at night and during the day, the same way that men share that obligation of reading the Megillah at night and during the day. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Pesachim Daf Kuf Ches that when we have the mitzvah of 4 cups of wine on Leil HaSeder, women have to drink those 4 cups of wine as well, even though that is a mitzvah that is only performed one time a year on Pesach night. But yet the Gemara says that they were included in the great miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, all the Makos, and that's what we commemorate on Leil HaSeder. And therefore the Gemara tells us that Dalet Kosos, Neres Hanukkah, Mikra Megillah are something that women share an obligation to do. The Rishonim even take it a step further, and they write that when we talk about the mitzvah of having 3 meals on Shabbos, so it's especially difficult during this time of year when Shabbos is over at 5 o'clock, and by the time you finish your meal, it's already late, and it's hard to figure out how you're going to fit in 3 meals on Shabbos, but we have an obligation to eat 3 meals on Shabbos. And the reason for that, some Rishonim say, is because this is to commemorate the fact that God gave us man, that he performed that great miracle, and he provided us with food for the entirety of Shabbos. And therefore we have 3 meals on our Shabbos to remind ourselves of that great miracle in the times of the Jewish people in the Midbar, in the desert. Well, are women obligated in having three meals on Shabbos as well? Contrary to popular belief, the answer is yes. Women have the same obligation, and the Rishonim say the reason why is because Af Hein Hayu Ba'Osa Hanes. Didn't women also have that miracle of the man? Weren't they also sustained in all those years in the desert when God provided them with that wonderful food? So then they have an obligation to commemorate the same way that the men do. And therefore it would translate into them having to eat three meals on Shabbos just as the men have to. And therefore we come to our point, which is about Neiros Chanukah, which the Gemara says in number Dalid. If you look here, it's in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Chaf Gimel. Isha Vaday Madlika. The Gemara says a woman certainly has an obligation to light the Chanukah candles. De Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavos Bener Chanukah, De Af Hein Hayu Ba'Oso Hanei. So men and women share the obligation of lighting Chanukah candles. Why? Because we were all in that great situation of danger. All together, we experienced the miracle, and therefore we assume that both men and women alike have that obligation. Now, what is the halacha with regard to a married woman? The Gemara clearly states here, if you have a woman who is single, a woman who is not married, she has to light the Chanukah candles, because why shouldn't she? But the Gemara does not tell us about a married woman. The Gemara does not say whether her husband is sufficient to light on her behalf or not. This was a fascinating discussion in the 16 and 1700s. This is not a feminist discussion. It's not a feminist conversation. It's something that happened by the great Gedolim of the 16 and 1700s. It's actually printed on the pages of every Shulchan Aruch. So this is not something from our generation. It's an old story. And this is mentioned by the Sefer Machtzis HaShekel, which is one of the primary commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchas Chanukah, where he writes, what is the halacha when we have a situation where a woman is not going to have her husband lighting for her, either because the husband is not home, or because she does not have a husband, or for whatever reason? Would she be obligated to light a menorah even if her husband is lighting? Sorry, I confused that. If a woman's husband is home and he is lighting, should she light as well? This was a very important question that was asked, and the Machtzis HaShekel writes, yes, yesh hidur im talik ba'atzma. I don't understand why a married woman would not light the Neiros Chanukah. Why shouldn't she? The same way she drinks her own four cups of wine, the same way that she, many women, even though they're not obligated to shake the Dalad Minim on Sukkot, but they do, many women go to shul to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and they don't say, my husband went to shul. They do the mitzvah on their own, and therefore, says the Machtzis HaShekel, I don't understand why this mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah would be any different from any other example where a woman should do the mitzvah on her own. The Elya Rabba, who was in the 1600s, said that is incorrect. A woman who is married and has her husband lighting for her at home should absolutely not light. Why? Because we have a concept in halacha referred to as ishto kugufo. Now this is a very strange application of that halacha, because that halacha really finds itself in the laws of Eidus. The halacha is, if I am related to someone, I'm not allowed to come into court and give testimony about that person, because I'm no gaya bedever. I have too much invested in whatever I'm going to say, and it's probably not going to be reliable. Well, the Gemara says that the same way that a person is not allowed to say testimony about themselves, a wife is considered the same as her husband. Ishto kegufo, a husband and wife are one unit. And that's with regard to the laws of Eidus. With regard to the laws of testimony, we say, Ishto kegufo, a husband and wife, are together and considered one unit. Now the Elya Rabba brings that over to our case, and he extends it 1,000 steps forward, and he says, the same way that we would say over there that a husband and wife are one unit, and therefore when it comes to testimony, they are both considered invalidated for each other, so too, when it comes to the lighting of the Chanukah candles, we should say that they are one unit, and once the husband lights, his wife is able to fulfill her obligation with his lighting. This is a very famous dispute. And the Mishnah Berurah writes that the practice in his community was that married women do not light Chanukah candles because they assume ishto kegufo. They assume that the husband's obligation is able to absolve his wife. However, my father quotes from Rav Soloveitchik that he took major issue with that psak of the Mishnah Berurah, and he thought that it really was not an accurate application of the halacha. Rav Soloveitchik was very adamant about the fact that married women should light the Hanukkah candles as well, even if their husbands are going to be lighting regardless. Again, two different minhagim, different communities do different things. I will say, even though my father is a very close Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik and follows many, many of the minhagim, when I grew up, my mother never lit Neris Hanukkah at home. And she always said, you can take your Rav Soloveitchik and do what you want. My father was a great Talmud Chacham and a Rosh Hashiva also. It's not what we did, so it's not what we're doing. So my sisters never lit, and my mother never lit. So again, two minhagim, both of them are extremely valid and have a very strong basis in halacha, again, back to the 16 and 1700s, but a very fascinating issue regardless. Either way, if a woman does not have a husband lighting, either because he's traveling or because he's not alive or she happens not to be married, whatever it might be, in any of those cases, certainly a woman would have an obligation to light her own Neiros Chanukah. That is clear. That is not something that is up for debate at all. The Gemara does say that with regard to all mitzvos, we have an obligation to spend money. Now, you sometimes go to the store and you see how much a box of matzah costs, and you say, wow, the Torah really does expect us to spend money on our mitzvos. You go to the store now and you see how much it costs to buy the pre-made oil candles. It's not so cheap anymore. Everything's pretty expensive. But how much am I obligated to spend? How much am I expected to spend for any mitzvah that I have to observe? So the Gemara says there's an expectation that we spend money, but there's a limit to how much we assume is reasonable for a person to be spending. And the Gemara says, "Hamevazves al yevazves yoser mechomesh." When I'm giving tzedakah, so there are always going to be poor people around. How much should I be giving away for the poor people? How much of my money should I give? So the Gemara says I should never give more than 20%. I never have an obligation to give more than 20% of my assets, which means maybe I have to give up to 20%. Again, that's an interesting question. But the Ramah says in Hilchos Dalad Minim, what if an esrog normally costs, a set of Dalad Minim costs, let's say $100, and now you live in a community where it's very hard to come by an esrog, and somebody's selling one for $1,000. Do I have to pay so much more than market value because that's my only opportunity to observe the mitzvah, to fulfill the mitzvah? Or do I say no? That's unreasonable. So the Ramah says it depends. One has to be willing to spend up to chomesh nechasev. One has to be willing to spend up to 20% of their assets in order to fulfill a mitzvah. That is an exorbitant amount of money for some people. That is a very high expectation. But yet, the Ramah says that's what we are expected to do. However, the Gemara says, although by every mitzvah that we observe throughout the year, we are expected to spend a certain amount of money, but no more than 20% of our assets, the Gemara says there are two exceptions to the rule. And those exceptions mean that we are expected to spend all of our money in order to observe these mitzvahs. And what are those? Dalet kosvos, the four cups of wine on the night of the Seder, and Neiros Chanukah. We are expected to spend more money to observe the mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah, and we are expected to spend more money to observe the mitzvah of Dalet kosvos on the night of the Seder, which is why we have a concept of giving charity before Pesach, Kimcha de Pischa. Everybody has to eat matzah. Everybody has to drink four cups of wine. And therefore, we try to help those who are unable to pay for it on their own. But the Gemara here says that the reason why these are exceptions to the rule is because these mitzvahs highlight the aspect of persume nisa, which means the whole objective of lighting the Chanukah candles is to project this nes to the world, to let everybody know, to remind them of the great miracle that took place. And because we want to publicize this miracle, therefore, the Gemara assumes that we have an obligation to spend more than we otherwise would have spent on any other mitzvah. In fact, the Gemara goes so far as to say, afilu mocher es ksuso. Let's say you have a homeless person who doesn't even have anything to sell. I don't even have anything that will help me get the Chanukah candles. What should I do? So the Gemara says a person would even have to sell his own shirt to be able to buy the Chanukah candles. Now we hope it would never come to such a time when a person would have to do that. But yet the Gemara says that's how far we take it when it comes to Neiros Chanukah. And Rav Soloveitchik said, this is so strange. The Torah doesn't want us to be crazy. The Torah doesn't want us to be fanatics. Why would the Torah expect us here by these two mitzvos? Why would the Torah go out of its way and say, you are expected to spend so much more money, such an exaggeration, just to perform the mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah? And Rav Soloveitchik writes so beautifully, if you look at number Hey, The reason why is Bibir HaInyan. Let's read it together. Al-Pi HaShkafer of Soloveitchik said maybe there's a beautiful reason behind this practice, and that is Debechol Shar Mitzvos. When it comes to our mitzvah observance throughout the year, of everything that we do, Lo Chivasan HaTorah LeHisnaheg BaOfen Mufraz UMugzam. God does not want us to be extreme or exaggerated people. He doesn't want us to be fanatics. Derachea Darchei Noam. The way of a Torah life is one that is moderate, that's measured. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live a moderate life. He doesn't want us to be too far to the extreme in either direction. Tibachal Adam Tzarech Lichios Al Pi Cheshbon. God wants us to live calculated lives and careful lives. V'horenu Chazal Shehamevazvez Al Yevazvez Yoser Mechomesh, which is why the Gemara says, one should never spend too much money to perform any mitzvah. You know, my father always told us as children, many people might be turned off by the story, I don't know, but there's a famous story that they tell, I don't know if it's true or not, but there's a famous story that they tell about the stipler. The stipler was one of the great tzaddikim in Bnei Brak, and they say that the reason why he was deaf is because when he was 19 or 20 years old, he was in the Russian army, and it was a Friday night, and the way that it worked, it was freezing cold outside, but they didn't have enough fur coats for everybody. So the way that it worked was, after you finished your shift, you had to take the coat off and leave it on the hanging on the tree for the next soldier who was going to come take over your shift. And then you went inside to the building. So the story goes, I don't know if it's true, but the story goes that the stipler was on one of these shifts in the middle of a very cold night in Siberia, and it was Shabbos, and the soldier who had left before him left the coat on the tree. Now on Shabbos, you're not allowed to handle things on a tree because maybe you're going to break a branch. So the story goes that the stipler was freezing cold, but he said, I'm not allowed to take the coat off the tree. So he stood out there the whole night, and even though he realized that he was getting terribly sick, so he said that he's going to hold strong and he's not going to take the coat, and he lost his hearing. That's the story that they say. Growing up as a child, I heard this story many times from many of my teachers, many of my rabbeim, and my father always told us in the house that he thinks it's a horrible story to tell our children because it's wrong. It's wrong. That's not what the halacha expects of us. The halacha would not say in such a case, if you know that you're getting sick and you know that you can lose your hearing for the rest of your life, the halacha would not say that you should leave the coat on the tree. So it's very nice that the stipler had that perspective. It's very nice that he was willing to think about doing such a thing, and it shows his avas Hashem. But it's the wrong chinuch to give our children. It's not the right message. The message is that the Ribono Shel Olam wants us to live good lives. Derachel Darchei Noam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live healthy and stable lives, and to be measured, and to be moderate, not to be fanatics, and not to be exaggerated. And therefore, again, I'm not taking away from the great tzidkus of the stipler. He was known to be a great tzaddik and a great Talmud Chacham. But the point being that this is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live every aspect of our lives. So why is it when it comes here to Neiros Chanukah that the Ribono Shel Olam expects us to be living in an exaggerated way, to do something that we otherwise would never do? Rav Soloveitchik said, Achein b'mitzvos habos l'shem persume nisa. When we perform a mitzvah that is really about publicizing a miracle, and we make a bracha sha'asa nisim la'avosenu, and we make a bracha thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the great miracles that He did for our ancestors so many years ago, suggests Rav Soloveitchik, ki'ilu anachnu meramzim lo, when we say that bracha sha'asa nisim la'avosenu, part of what we mean is that we are suggesting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, She'ulai yamshich o lasos nisim af ba'adenu. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to perform miracles for us. Bayamim ahein bazman hazeh. The same way we're recounting miracles from thousands of years ago, we hope that in our generation you'll do miracles for us as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like to do miracles in the world. It's not the way the world is run. Normally the world runs al pi derech hateva. The world has a natural course of events. It's an unusual event when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a miracle. Says Rav Soloveitchik, if we are asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go out of His natural, normal way of running the world and to perform miracles for us, we need to be willing to show that we are also going to go above and beyond the natural and normal response that we would have for any mitzvah that we would do. And therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, that's why in particular, when it comes to Neiros Chanukah, which is all about reminding ourselves and reminding HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bayamim Ahein Bazman Hazeh, it reminds the Ribono Shel Olam of the great miracles He did back then, and we ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu do miracles for us today. It is only in a situation like that that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that request, but in response we say to him, we're also going to go above and beyond. We will also spend more than we otherwise would. We're going out of our way, and we ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to go out of your way. And I've always found that to be a very beautiful comment, a very beautiful insight into explaining why this is different than some of the others. There is a halacha that we find by many, many mitzvahs that we observe throughout the year. And that is, if you look at number Zion, the Gemara says in Masechta Sukkah, Daf Lamed Ches, Mi Shabba Bederech, somebody who is traveling on Sukkis, V'lo Hadaya Biyado Lolav Lito, he's traveling and it's at a time when there is no opportunity to shake the Dalad Minim. They didn't have Chabad, and they didn't have an opportunity to find a spare Dalad Minim around. So now, this person runs in from a very long trip, and they didn't have the option of shaking Dalad Minim. Now they come home, L'kishei Kanes L'beiso, when they come home on Sukkis, Yitol Al Shulchano. The Gemara says, you should shake the lulav on your table. What does that mean? It means the minute you walk into the house, you should stand on the table and shake the lulav? Obviously not, that's insane. It's not what the Gemara means. So Rashi explains, obviously the Gemara is not saying that somebody should jump on the tables and do the mitzvah. Not what the Gemara is telling us to do, but rather, im shachach, what it means is, I come home from a very long day of traveling, and I'm really hungry. And I realize that I've just come home, and I have not yet shaken the dalad minim, but I also have not yet had a nice hot meal. So I'm hungry, but I also have a mitzvah to do. So I sit down right away to eat, and then I realize, one second, I didn't yet do the mitzvah of dalad minim. Says the Gemara, Yitol al Shulchano, you stop your meal in the middle, even though you're already sitting at the table, you go perform your mitzvah of shaking the Dalad Minim, and then you come back and finish up your meal. That's what it means, Yitol al Shulchano. And from here we learn that whenever one has an obligation to perform a mitzvah, they are not allowed to be engaged in eating food. They should be performing the mitzvah and not being distracted by eating food. Sometimes, the Gemara says, one gets carried away when eating a meal. And we all know that to be true. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Hilchos Dalad Minim, in Siman Taf Reish Nun Beis. The Shulchan Aruch quotes it as well in Hilchos Bedikas Chametz. On Leil Bedikas Chametz, when we have an obligation to search our homes for chametz, says the Shulchan Aruch, we don't have a right to sit down and eat dinner until we perform the mitzvah. Now, does that mean nobody in the house is allowed to eat? Good question. But whoever's going to be involved in the mitzvah of bedikas chametz, whoever is obligated to do so, they have to make sure to hold off on eating until they do the mitzvah. This is something that is quoted in Shulchan Aruch as well when it comes to Mikra Megillah. When the Shulchan Aruch says we have an obligation to read the Megillah on Leil Purim, and we've been fasting the whole day, it's Tainus Esther, and we're hungry. But there's a concern, says the Shulchan Aruch, if we're going to go ahead and eat dinner now, maybe we're going to get carried away with the meal and we're going to forget about the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. And therefore the Gemara says, even though we're hungry, even though we've fasted the whole day, we should go immediately to shul and we should have the Megillah read before engaging in eating. And the Shulchan Aruch writes the same thing with regard to Neres Hanukkah. The Magen Avraham quotes it there in Siman Taf Reish Ayin Beis, that we should be careful that before we engage in the mitzvah of Neres Hanukkah, that we do not eat a meal. Now, sometimes this is very problematic because there are many families that all wait to light Hanukkah candles together. Perhaps the person who's going to light candles is not going to be home until 7 o'clock and everybody gets home from school at 4:30 or 5, so they want to eat dinner then. So this is potentially an issue and this is something that many families struggle with and it's a hard thing to figure out how to do right. It's not so simple. So the Shahar Tzion writes that yes, this is an issue. If you look in Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach here in number Ches, Reb Shlomo Zalman says, I think what is obvious, but Reb Shlomo Zalman writes, Ha'iser lechol v'lasos malacha chatzi shah lefnei ha'halaka, nohe gam benashim, says Reb Shlomo Zalman. Since we know that men and women are equally obligated in the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles, therefore, men and women are equally unable to eat dinner before they do the mitzvah. And therefore, he says, if you happen to be waiting for somebody to come home from work to light candles together at 7 o'clock. Again, the kids might be able to eat, it's not a problem. But the adults really should not be engaged in that until the mitzvah of Neres Hanukkah is done. Obviously, you're allowed to take a snack, you're allowed to take a drink, but to sit down and have an actual meal, to have a Kviyas Suda, is something that would not be considered appropriate. The same way we find that halacha by all the other mitzvahs that we observe throughout the year. There is a major ambiguity about where one is supposed to light Neros Hanukkah. And this is a major question for any of us who have been to Eretz Yisrael on Hanukkah. You'll notice that most of the communities there light outside of their homes. For those of us who live in Chutz La'aretz and spend Hanukkah here, you'll notice that most people in Chutz La'aretz light Hanukkah candles inside the home. So what's the story? How do you explain what that's all about? So the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, let's look at the bottom, number Tes, Ner Hanukkah, the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles is Lahanicha al Pesach Beiso Mibachutz. The obligation really is to have the Hanukkah candles lit outside of our home, outside of the door. Vim Hayadar Ba'aliyah, what if I live in an apartment building and I'm not in a position where I can put it outside the house? That's not my front door. Manicha Bechalon Hasamach L'Rishus HaRabim. Then I put it by a window where somebody from the street will be able to see into my home. Uvishas HaSakana, writes the Gemara, what if I live at a time when I'm scared to light outside? And I'm afraid that somebody's going to come and vandalize my house, or I'm afraid somebody's going to come and steal my menorah. In such a case, says the Gemara, no problem. Close all the shades. Manicha al shulchan v'dayo. It's good enough. It's not a problem at all. You should still light the Hanukkah candles inside of your home, even if you don't have an opportunity for anyone to see them outside of your house. That is still an obligation that we have. Now, the question then becomes, and this was raised by the Ar Zarua. Ar Zarua lived in the 1100s, and the Ar Zarua was one of the great giants in the Rishonim. He lived in Austria, in Vienna. And the Ar Zarua asks the obvious, and that is, Ha'idna deleka sakana, he says, I'm living a great life here in Austria, and there doesn't seem to be too much anti-Semitism right now. So now that I live this great, beautiful life where I am in Chutz La'aretz, lo yadana maitaima einana madlikim mechatzeros. Why do we not go back to this practice of lighting outside? What is that about? The Gemara says that b'shas ha'sakana, when there's danger to light outside, then we don't do it. Obviously, we never want to endanger ourselves or our fellow Jews or neighbors anywhere. But when there's no sakana, asks the Ar Zarua, why don't we light outside? I would venture to say, yes, there is an uptick in anti-Semitism all over the world. But I would venture to say that probably in our community in Woodmere, if we would light outside, I don't think it would bother most of our neighbors. Again, if we did it in a safe way. But I don't think it would bother most people. I don't think there would be vandalism if we left our menorahs outside. So why don't we do it? It's an old question from a couple of hundred years ago, 1,000 years ago. Why don't we do it? The same question they were grappling with then. So if you turn to the second side of the page, the Aruch HaShulchan explains why it is that we don't do this. And the Aruch HaShulchan was one of the great Gedolim who lived in Europe. He was the authoritative figure before the Mishneh Berurah came around. The Mishneh Berurah died, the Chafetz Chaim died in the 1930s. But before he wrote the Mishneh Berurah, everybody followed the Aruch HaShulchan. Everybody was looking at the Aruch HaShulchan, and the Mishneh Berurah was not even heard of. Nobody knew about the Mishneh Berurah. My father told me that he never had a set of Mishneh Berurah until he got married. He said nobody had such a thing. So it's interesting how times have changed. And now everybody learns Mishneh Berurah, nobody learns Aruch HaShulchan anymore, but it's interesting. So here the Aruch HaShulchan explains what this is all about. And he says, Vihinei, Ata einanu madlikim b'chutz. Nowadays we know that for those of us living in Chutz La'aretz, we don't generally light outside. Va'afshe ein sakana etzlenu. Even though we may live in a community where it's not dangerous for us to light outside, nobody would have a problem with it. Mikal makom kimat hu mehan nimnaos. It wouldn't make sense to do it. Mipnei shebechol hamadina shalanu, yemei Chanukah hem yemei sagrir. It's freezing outside on Chanukah. Now the Aruch HaShulchan lived in Europe. Geshem v'shelag v'ruchos chazakim. Imagine every night of Hanukkah you're going to have to worry about maybe the wind is going to blow the candle off and maybe it's going to cause a fire, and then I'm going to say, okay, so I have to sit outside the whole time while the candles are lit, then I'm going to be freezing. So what am I going to do? Says the Aruch HaShulchan. So maybe it's going to rain and my candles are going to go out, and then I start asking myself, should I relight it? Should I not light it? How long was it lit? Do I have to worry about this? It just doesn't make sense. The conditions, the weather conditions, are not conducive to us lighting outside. So he says, yes, you can get a glass box and figure out how to put a menorah in there and then light in there. They wouldn't expect us to go that far and start buying a box and have a plexiglass made exactly to the size of our menorah and then light outside and make sure it doesn't catch fire. He says, once you're putting it into a box, then already it loses its flavor. It's not like proudly presented outside of the house. In many communities, they'll say, you need a permit for that, and they're not going to allow us to put a box outside of our homes. Maybe the wind is going to blow the box away. And therefore, he says, therefore, he said, we have made one standard, one common practice for all communities in Chutz La'aretz, and that is that we all light inside of our homes. We don't light outside anymore just because it doesn't make sense for us to light outside. Maybe in Eretz Yisrael it's not as cold. Maybe in Eretz Yisrael it's not as windy, it's not as rainy. And nobody seems to care there in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore they do it. But here in Chutz La'aretz, writes the Aruch HaShulchan, this is the reason why we do it. Now this goes without saying that the obligation to light Neres Chanukah is only when we are in our homes. It's only Ner Ishu Beso. I got an email yesterday from somebody who's in a dorm. And this boy wrote that in the dorms, they never allow them to light inside of their rooms, obviously, because there's a very major safety concern to be worried about. So they never let them light in the dorm. However, there always was one designated room on each floor of the dorms where they had a fire extinguisher and they had some kind of a person who was in charge of watching everybody's menorahs. And everybody used to come together and light there. This year, they told all the members of this dormitory that they're not allowed to light in that room because it's going to cause crowding and everyone's going to get too close to each other and they have COVID concerns. So this boy writes that he's not sure exactly where he should light the Neres Chanukah. And he says that option number one is that he should light maybe in the shul that he davens in. So he said, maybe I'll just go to shul for Mincha and Maariv. I'll light candles in shul and I'll sit there for a little bit. But he said, I'm not even sure if they're going to keep the shul open for me. Once Maariv is over, they lock the shul. Option number two, he said, is I can light... I forgot what option number two was. He said he can go to a restaurant and light at the table or something like that. And option number three, he said, is just to light an electric menorah in his room. So what should I do? So that's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. But the premise of the question is that the place that we're supposed to light is in a makom that is my bias, where it's my house. Now, to light in the shul, my father felt, is not even an option. That's not your house. Certainly not your house. To light in a restaurant, also not an option. And therefore, there are many who have objection to the practice that when there's a wedding on Chanukah, that people light Chanukah candles outside in the hall of the wedding. That is not my bias at all. It has nothing to do with me. I was an invited guest to that wedding. Whether the person paying for the wedding could light there, whether the chasan and kala could light there, is a different story. But as a guest who's just attending the wedding, that's a very questionable practice, and certainly to light with a bracha there would be a major, major question. So these kinds of questions come up all the time, and especially the question I get every year on Chanukah is, I'm on a flight and I'm going to an airport and I don't know what to do. First of all, why did you book a flight in the middle of the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neres Chanukah? Unless you're going to Australia or South Africa, you know, and you need to have such an extended flight, or now everyone's going to Dubai. So unless you have such a long flight, figure it out. Think about this before Chanukah comes. Think about it. How are we going to take care of our mitzvah of Neres Chanukah, which should be important to us? The Rambam that we started with says, this is a mitzvah chaviva ad miod. So we have to think about it before. But very often people ask, can I light the Neres Chanukah on a plane? Now, number one, don't try this at home. Don't ever light any fires on a plane. You'll be arrested. And then you'll be very worthy of lighting candles in jail. That's a great place to light candles. So not a good idea. However, talking about people who are responsible and are not going to actually light a candle on a plane, the question is, should they light some kind of electric menorah on a plane? It's a question that's been asked. Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and many others feel, that's not my bias. My plane is not my house. I happen to be in a plane right now, but that's not considered my house at all. I paid for a ticket. I'm a guest like everybody else. And therefore, many assume that Neres Chanukah in such a case can certainly not be lit with a bracha. Some say maybe you should bring an electric menorah and just turn it on, that people should see that it's Chanukah. Maybe. But more than that, is a tough argument to make that people should be lighting candles in an airport or anything of that nature. Now, what happens if I don't have anybody in my house and I am living alone? So the whole mitzvah of Neres Chanukah is persume nisa, is that people should see that I'm publicizing a miracle. But what if I live in a place where nobody's going to see? I live on a quiet street and there's nobody in my house and nobody's visiting today. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that obviously in such a case, one would still light the Neres Chanukah. That should not hold me back from lighting the Neres Chanukah. I should still do my mitzvah regardless, even if nobody is going to see it other than myself. That is the mitzvah. That is what I'm supposed to do. Now, what is the proper Zman Hadlaka? When is a person supposed to begin lighting the Chanukah candles? And this is a major question. The Gemara says that the mitzvah is mishetishaka hachama. The mitzvah begins when the sun sets, which, like everything else in Judaism, is not clear. What does that mean, when the sun sets? Well, I just said when the sun sets, so what's the question? Well, the Rishonim discussed, does it mean when the sun begins to set, or does it mean when the sun has finished setting? So that can normally take how long? I don't know. Half an hour, right? The sun starts setting, and then it's still light outside for 20, 30 minutes, so does it mean that I light candles at the onset of that process, or do I light the candles at the end of that process? This is a major discussion in the Rishonim. And the Shulchan Aruch says that this means that one should light the Hanukkah candles after the sun has completely set, which we refer to as Seis HaKochav. Once the stars are visible in the sky and the sun has completely set, that is when one is supposed to light the Hanukkah candles. The Vilna Gaon, on the other hand, said that that is a mistake. And he said that Hanukkah candles should be lit once the sun begins the process of setting. So these are two different practices, depending on who you follow, where you come from. That is a major point of debate, major point of dispute. Many have said that you should follow some kind of compromise opinion, which is to light 20 minutes after the sun has set. This way, it's not too late, it's not too early. That's what many, many people do. But anyway, those are the two opinions about that. Now, how long do the candles need to be lit? So this is an interesting issue. The Gemara says that you have to have your candles lit. Ad shetichle haregel min hashuk. So let's remind ourselves. In the days of the Gemara, once the sun set, it was dark outside. How much longer were people roaming around the streets? How much longer was there a possibility of people going anywhere? Another 20 minutes, 30 minutes after the sun set, that's it. So the Gemara says, I only have to have the candles lit at shetichle haregel min hashuk, until people are no longer shopping, until people are no longer walking around the streets. That's when my candles can be put out. That's when my candles can go out, and they no longer have an obligation to be lit. Now today, the question is, how long would that be? In the days of the Gemara, that was a half an hour. We all know, right? We all got those boxes of candles in the mail all those years, and the candles only last a half an hour. Why? Because the assumption is that you only have to have candles lit for a half an hour. But that's based on the Gemara, where the Gemara says that in their days, the only people that were roaming around the streets was a half hour after sundown. And therefore, they only let the candles lit for a half hour. The question is today whether or not that changes. Most assume that once Chazal said it's a half an hour, once they said it's until people stop roaming the streets, it means a half an hour. The Biskarov was famous for being quoted as saying that he lived on a street where there was a movie theater, and he said that there were people coming out of the movie theater at 12 o'clock at night, and therefore he said that maybe you have to have your candles lit in our generation much, much later. Why? Because people are still roaming the streets 10, 11 o'clock at night. It's not so unusual, especially if you live on a busy street. So in a case like that, there are many who say that it would be a nice idea to have the candles extend longer, not just a half hour. Again, I think most assume that a half hour is sufficient, but if you have the ability to have them lit longer, that would definitely be a very nice idea and a very nice thing to do. As we all know, we have an obligation to make a bracha before we light the Hanukkah candles. And the minhag is that we make three different brachas. We make a bracha lahadlik ner shel Hanukkah, we make a bracha she'asa nisim la'avoseinu, and we make a bracha of Shehechiyanu. Shehechiyanu is only recited on the first night of Hanukkah. We do not recite it on the rest of the nights of Hanukkah. But we recite three brachos when lighting the Hanukkah candles. Those brachos are meant to be recited before one lights. We always have a principle that whenever we perform a mitzvah and a bracha is supposed to be recited, we recite the bracha before the performance of that mitzvah. What happens if one forgot to make the bracha? Somebody's so excited to light the Neres Hanukkah that they forget to make the bracha. That is a question that is discussed by Rabbi Akiva Eger and others. And they say that, well, you can no longer make the bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Hanukkah. That means I am making a bracha on the fact that I am about to do a mitzvah of lighting the candles. Well, that doesn't make sense anymore once the candles have already been lit. However, the other two brachas, he argues, can still be made after the candles are already lit. Why? Because I make a bracha when I look at the candles and I say, Shehechiyanu v'kiyamanu v'hagiyanu l'zman hazeh, how beautiful that I had the opportunity to observe a mitzvah since last year, and I'm well and I'm healthy and I'm here and I'm able to do this mitzvah once again. Shehechiyanu is still relevant, and she'asa nisim is still relevant as well. I can thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracles. By the mere fact that I'm looking at the candles, that is a sufficient reason for me to say the bracha of Sha'asanisim and Shehechiyanu. And therefore, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, should one forget to recite the brachos on his or her own, they have the opportunity to make those two brachos afterward, but the first bracha should be left out. Something that's important to remember is the Shulchan Aruch writes, when it comes to Hilchas Birchas Hamazon and other places, he says that, you know, sometimes you see that a person washes and gets ready to eat, and then they say, Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, and then they, let's say in an airport, right? So you pack up a sandwich or whatever it is, and then they make the bracha Hamotzi, and then they start unpacking the sandwich and trying to find whatever it is that they want. Shulchan Aruch says, no, the better way to do it is first unpack everything that you need, get it all ready, and then when everything's ready, that's when you make the bracha, because right after the bracha is when you should perform the mitzvah or eat the thing eat the item of food. Sometimes you have a person makes a ha'etz, and they're assuming there's an apple in the fridge or an orange in the fridge, and then they go to look for it after they made the bracha, but then it ends up taking longer, and then they realize, oh, the kids took all the apples to school, and then they're stuck. So the Shulchan Aruch says one should always prepare the mitzvah before they make the bracha and have everything ready to go, and then you make the bracha and do the mitzvah. And the same would apply here. Neiros Chanukah sometimes is a little bit of a balagan. You know, there's oil spilling, there's candles all over the place, and there are matches all over the place, and oh, this isn't set up properly, and that's not right. Set up everything beforehand, and then make the bracha. We should not do it in the opposite direction. Don't first make the bracha and then say, oh, I forgot this, I forgot that, this isn't here. We should make sure that everything is set and ready to go, and only then should we make the bracha. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that there is a discussion when we say, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu in Shmona Esrei, what should a convert, what should a ger say in the beginning of Shmona Esrei? How can I say, you are the God of my father, if my father was not a Jew? If my father was a non-Jew and I converted later on in my life? So that's a major question. And the same question has been asked many, many times by converts in our community who have asked me, what do they do on Hanukkah? How can they say, She'asan nisim la'avoseinu? How can I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for doing miracles for my ancestors when, after all, my ancestors were not a part of that great miracle? So what do they say? Do they leave out the bracha? Very fascinating question that actually dates back to the days of the Rambam. The Rambam had interactions with many people of his generation, but one of them was Rabbeinu Ovadia HaGer. Rabbeinu Ovadia HaGer was known to be a Catholic priest who lived in the 12th century in Italy. And Rabbeinu Ovadia HaGer later on converted to become a Jew. It's not clear exactly why he converted, not clear exactly who inspired him to convert. But he was known to be a very prominent Catholic priest, and then he came over. Some say it happened because of some of the crusades that he had seen, that he had experienced. I'm not sure exactly what the story is, but either way, they say that Rabbeinu Ovadia HaGer had become a convert after he was a very prominent figure of the Catholic religion. Why was his name Ovadia? Why did they name him Ovadia? That's an interesting question. So some say the reason why is because Ovadia himself, the Navi Ovadia, was a convert. The Gemara says he was a convert, which is an interesting fact, that Ovadia converted and later on became one of the Nevi'im that is enshrined in the Sifrei HaTanakh. So there were many, many converts over the generations who looked to the Navi Ovadia and said, look what you can accomplish. You can convert to Judaism and not only be a member of the Jewish community, you can be a Navi. You can be one of the Sifrei HaTanakh that is going to be remembered and studied for all future generations. So that's why there were many, many converts over the years who took upon themselves the name Ovadia. So this Jew's name after he converted was known to be Rabbeinu Ovadia HaGer. And he had a correspondence with the Rambam. And the Rambam writes to him, addressing this issue. Rabbeinu Ovadia HaGer said, what do I do every day when I daven Shmona Esrei? How do I say, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu? What do I do when I get to the words in benching, Asher Hinchalta L'Avoseinu? Thank you, God, for giving the land of Eretz Yisrael to my ancestors. My ancestors were not involved in Eretz Yisrael. So how do I address that? What do I do on Chanukah when I'm supposed to say, She'asan Nisim L'Avoseinu? Do I leave it out? Do I say, She'asan Nisim L'Avoseihem? Do I say, I thank God for doing a miracle for their grandparents, for their ancestors? These were very interesting questions that were posed by Rabbeinu Ovadia HaGer, and the Rambam responds to him and he says, you should consider yourself like everybody else. And you should say, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, and you should say, Asher Hinchalta L'Avoseinu, and you should say, She'asan Nisim L'Avoseinu, and all these things you're allowed to say, and the Rambam gives an explanation to suggest why that's okay. But either way, this is a question that actually comes up every so often, and it's an important question to be aware of and to be sensitive to, that there are converts in our community who have a sensitivity to this issue, and we have to think about it and think about it very carefully. But either way, this is a very, very brief and basic synopsis of some of the highlights of the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah. But most importantly, it's critical for us to do whatever we can to be home at the time of halakha, to be available to do the mitzvah properly, to make sure in advance that we figure out a way to set it up properly, that we shouldn't have to have all kinds of emergencies, that we shouldn't have to be out of the house, that we shouldn't have to attend other things. We should be home. We should be observing the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah the way it's supposed to be observed. We should be able to do it bihidura, as we know that Hanukkah candles are one of the mitzvahs that we do with great expense and with great excitement, like the Rambam tells us. And it's something that should give us an opportunity to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bayamim Mahem Bazman Hazeh, She'asa Nisim Labuseinu, you did so many miracles for our ancestors, for our parents, which is all that we commemorate on Hanukkah. And we ask that you do it once again, Bayamim Mahem Uvazman Hazeh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should once again show us those great miracles and give us the opportunity to experience His miracles once again in our generation. I wish everyone a wonderful Hanukkah. Should I assume that next week we're on? We're off? I don't know.